For a team that Greg Sankey and his staff sit on the road all year long.
Time now for the College Football Inquirer with Dan Wetzel.
I don't really want to make it a school versus school thing because someone will send me more stats.
Russ Dellinger.
I wanted to be a weatherman. That's what I wanted to be at first.
And SI's Pat Ford.
He'll add Notre Dame sucks to his list of schools that sucks.
Here's Pat, Russ, and Dan.
Welcome to the pod playoff bracket set edition. It's here. And I got to start with this. Last week, after Iowa defeated Nebraska. I know.
We're all wondering where you're coming from here.
Wait, what?
Who? After Iowa defeated Nebraska despite gaining five first downs, punting is winning, gentlemen. Iowa coach Kirk Ferentz quoted Albert Einstein. This is what he said. This is per Ferentz. This is Einstein. Not everything that can be counted counts. Not everything that counts can be counted.
Whoa.
Mm-hmm. As Ferentz added, I think that sometimes explains the way things go in sports. Your early skepticism was just blown to pieces by that amazing entry. Pat. 134 teams in this sport took the field 1,624 times this fall. Still got Army, Navy to go. And it was the final kick of the final game in the final second on Saturday night, a 54-yarder by Clemson freshman Nolan Hooser, to settle the 12-team playoff. Clemson was back from the grave, courtesy ACC's automatic bid. SMU and Alabama were now on edge to see who would get bounced out because of it. Stats, metrics, records, arguments, philosophies, everything else flew all night. Insults all morning. Early morning texts from ADs and commissioners and advocates. A rollicking debate. All in the hope and somehow it would seep into the minds of the 13-person committee that is sequestered in a suburban Texas hotel with a bunch of TVs and apparently a nacho bar.
Yeah. Colossus, too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And they're not supposed to be listening. In the end, the field is the field. Oregon, Georgia, Boise State, Arizona State. They get 1-4, and they get a bye, but not a home game. Meanwhile, we get this delicious opening weekend. Number 12, Clemson at Texas. Number 5, Texas. Number 11, SMU at number 6, Penn State. Number 10, Indiana at number 7, Notre Dame. Number 9, Tennessee at number 8, Ohio State. Paul! Is the field right? Is the field wrong? Did Alabama get screwed? Didn't so-and-so deserve to be in the field because so-and-so didn't deserve to be in the field? Is there such a thing in life as deserve? Yes, no, who the hell knows? You can twist yourself in a knot because of the disparate schedules, the conference realignment, the contradicting criteria, and the real or imagined biases of everyone. But this is a sport, as we chronicle here every week, every show, built on chaos. So many teams, so many places. So many petty politics and regional pride. There are more teams in the ACC than the AFC, including two of them that overlook the Pacific. 1869, Princeton and Rutgers students played the first game. It took 155 freaking years to get organized to give us this. It was not going to be perfect. It wasn't supposed to be perfect. The not perfect is a feature, a glorious feature of the sport, not a solvable bug. Probably far closer to perfect than imaginable because, yes, Alabama, I feel for you, but It was a self-inflicted wound in Norman that got you here. Besides, what counts, what can be counted, what can't be, if neither the great minds of Ference or Einstein can figure it out, Pat, how the hell should I? How'd the committee
There's
do?
A soliloquy. How'd the committee I hope that's also a column, because that's pretty good. Say
podcast only.
Okay. There you go. Yeah. Bonus content.
Exclusive.
Yeah. I'm tickled on like several different levels. I think that we have the correct teams playing for the championship. I think we have a wonderful month of playoff football to come. We've got somebody from every time zone. We've got teams from 10 different states. We have a team that used to be a school that used to be a junior college not that long ago and plays on blue turf that gets a bye. We have a team that was picked to finish last in the 16-team league that finished first and gets a bye. We have the Indiana Hoosiers, who have arguably been the worst power conference team of them all in the field. We got so much here. We've got SMU that wasn't in a power conference until it bought its way in this year that made it. And I do dearly love the fact that a season that began shortly after noon Eastern time in Dublin, Ireland on August 24th, with a game that nobody saw coming, Georgia Tech upsetting Florida State, went down to the literal last play, as you said, 11:48 p.m. Saturday night. The last play before Selection Sunday, and that 56-yard field goal by a freshman that cleared the bar by about a yard.
Was it 56? I had 54.
Yeah.
I was wrong.
56.
Whatever. 56. My bad.
Yeah. And we have a bid thief, and we had a team knocked out, and the team knocked out is the team that has owned the previous iteration of the playoff, Alabama. So, I mean, there is so much there. There is obviously acrimony. There will be second guessing. Hopefully we don't have Greg Sankey storm in, take his ball, go home and remake the playoff just yet for 2027. They may get to that, but let's please think about it. Let's watch this thing finish unfolding, and let's enjoy an awesome month to come.
It is awesome to finally get here. You know, think about 7 years ago. It's January 2019. So 6 years, five almost years six ago. Years ago.
Five, yeah.
Six, yeah. 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 A month from 6 years ago that the request was made to explore playoff expansion. And here we are, finally revealed the bracket. And as we expected, right, plenty of agitation and frustration. I think obviously mostly from the SEC and in Alabama, with Alabama getting left out, but as well as Miami too. And I think Tennessee not getting the home game with Ohio State there in a competition with Ohio State finishing a spot behind. So those three stress levels we talked about certainly were tested by the committee. But, you know, when you look at it, I don't know how many real big glaring things, like glaring issues there were. I can't find that many. But here's the thing, Dan, and this is going to be a talking point all offseason, right, is – the incoming impending change to the format in the selection process, and a lot of folks are going to point to all these different issues and how close these teams are and how it's impossible to separate or rank them because they all don't play similar schedules. And that came up on the broadcast, is the schedules are all so different. There's no uniform governing body of college athletics that creates equitable schedules. You heard Kurt Herbstreit ask Nick Saban if that's a possibility in the future. And Nick Saban's certainly addressed that. But that, to me, that's like what's come out of all this, right, is this fight on the strength of schedule and the future of scheduling in college football related to the format and into the selection process.
Well, it's a fair point. There are. The schedules make no sense. But A, that's how this has always been done. Nobody wants to cede any power and cede control over anything, any decision-making to anyone else. B, the Big Ten and the SEC went on an expansion run that changed how these things would have spread out. And so, yeah, SMU schedule didn't, like, it'll take SMU or Indiana, either one. Schedule didn't work out quite evenly as it would be for somebody else in their leagues. Well, that's because their leagues are now 17 and 18 teams big.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, yeah. I wish, I've been pushing this fight for a long time. And I thought the playoff would be a reason why leagues would find stability, because you would kind of sit there and go, hey, we've got a good path to the title in this league. We're not going anywhere. And now the leagues are bigger and the scheduling's off. I get that, but that's a massive change. It just isn't really going to happen. I certainly hope that the SEC does not pout and overreact and take a howitzer to what's a gnat problem. This is not that controversial. I get Alabama's argument. I understand it. In a lot of ways, I agree with it. But that doesn't mean we need to expand the playoff and we get four automatic bids for the SEC and all this stuff. It means don't get your ass kicked by Oklahoma.
Yeah, that's what it means. One of the other things Nick Saban did say when this was all being unfolded shortly after the bracket had been revealed is that no coaches should complain about what they got. They all had a chance to control their destiny at some point in time and didn't.
We're getting so many positives out of this playoff, including all these games, including a different type of championships. And we've argued, get rid of these conference championships. But it was something magical about Saturday night when the entire sport is watching this SMU-Clemson game. And SMU, first it's like, if you're an Alabama fan, you're rooting for Clemson because just blow SMU out, we're going to get in. And then SMU mounts this comeback. Now you got to root for SMU to win. And then they tie it. And then Clemson reels off this out of nowhere kickoff return, then completes a pass, and they get this freshman hits this kick. And it's like, we got something out of that. We got a great, interest in the Arizona State, Iowa State. We get other stuff. So it is a bit of a trade-off. If we're down to a committee choosing between two flawed teams, and that's what SMU and Alabama were, and you got to make a call, that's going to happen no matter how many teams you put in this thing, unless you put all 134 in.
And the Mike Leach way. The Mike Leach method.
Yeah, Mike Leach way. Or like some of these state high school groups are just like, I don't want to have to make the call. Everybody's in. You got some 0-11 poor high school team playing in a state championship, in the playoffs. So this works spectacularly well. And if we're just going to sit there and go, well, Alabama's aggrieved, we got to blow the whole sport up, or the poor SEC didn't quite get all their teams in, and the disparity in schedules in the SEC was a problem. Kirby Smart was calling out Greg Sankey for that, even though I don't think Greg Sankey makes the schedule. I mean, Georgia had to play a gauntlet and Texas didn't. And so this is where we're at because of a lot of other decisions. And so to make one reactive decision to solve it would be tragic. I have a list of things we can go through on how I would fix this. Some tweaks that I think should be done, that could be done without sitting there saying, that's it, this 12 team doesn't work because poor Alabama didn't get in once.
But Dan, college sports always overreacts, right? They make a rule, and then 2 years later, they change the rule, and they change that rule 2 years later, and so on and so on. It has been very reactionary. I will say, though, Greg Sankey has been very clear, and he's given me the quote a few times, of not to be reactionary. He said that a few times, actually. He wanted to give this time and not react to something, fairly quickly because of something that happened the first year, And part of the reason they delayed the format discussion, Dan, in the spring was because they wanted to see at least a year of it, you know, before this coming spring, maybe they make some decisions on 2026 and beyond. But, you know, I have a quote here from Greg Sankey from about 2 weeks ago. You want to see what happens first. One of the lessons from the creators of the CFP is not to sit there and tweak it all the time. I'm not just going to jump out to say we need to do this or we need to do that. I did then follow and asked him about automatic qualifiers, multiple automatic qualifiers for single conferences, right? And he said he didn't have a thought on that day. He may have a thought on that now, after getting three and not four teams into the field, but certainly that's something that's been pushed mostly by the Big Ten, right? Is multiple automatic qualifiers per league. And again, we talked about this on the pod a lot. That would limit the subjectivity in decision-making of a selection committee if you just went by conference standing and you have all these automatic bids. But, you know, again, that would cause other problems too. If you look right now and you did that, right, you made a bracket in the, if the SEC got four AQs and the Big Ten got four and the ACC and Big 12 each got two and one G5 and one at large, Dan, if you did that, guess what you're going to run into? You're going to run into serious tiebreaker issues within conference standings to decide who goes to the playoff and who doesn't.
Yeah. And you created a bunch of ties by having too big a league and not enough league games. So that's part and parcel of this.
All right. We're going to keep talking right after this. A couple things I would do, though. If pertaining to what Alabama went through, as I have said on this pod many times and written, I am I believe that if you're ranked ahead of a team after 12 weeks and then you have to play a 13th game and they don't, you shouldn't get knocked down. So philosophically, intellectual argument, I agree with SMU staying above Alabama. Here is my issue with this, though. The only reason we know what they're ranked after 12 weeks is because we make the committee do this mock process. The weekly rankings need to go. There should just be one bracket reveal at the end. And then perhaps there is a more holistic approach to ranking these teams at the end, because we're no longer with this argument, you can't knock a team out because they lost in their conference championship game. Because there's no knocking out. Because nothing has happened yet. And to say, okay, they had to play 13 instead of 12, I agree. You shouldn't, if you've already said after 12, one team is better, that's it. But to say that 12 games and 13 games are automatically equal is not intellectually accurate. It's like you run a mile on a treadmill at 0.0% incline or 5% incline. It's not the same, right? So you can look and go, hey, they played 13 games. These guys played 12. But if I look at the number of top 50 games they played, it's actually equal or it's less or whatever. And by boxing themselves in, they had to do a lot of stuff here. And that included Penn State staying above Ohio State, or maybe Tennessee not getting a full look at, do they deserve to be ahead of, say, Notre Dame or whatever, whatever you want to come up with. I don't really want to make it a school versus school thing, because someone will send me more stats. But if you're sitting down for the first time this weekend and doing this process, and you could release this thing at 6 o'clock at night too, you don't have to do it at noon, and they spend all day coming up with it, I think you have a better shot to avoid what I think all of us would like, a fair look. But when you're sitting there saying the state of conference championship games rests on the decision of what you do with SMU, that shouldn't be a criteria for who gets in the playoff. So first thing I would do is get rid of this ranking show and the weekly rankings.
I mean, I think we all agree that that has been more harm than good for everybody but ESPN. You know, it has put the committee in a difficult position. It has been a completely thankless task for the chairperson, who has to get up and explain things. It's sowed confusion. It's sowed anger. It has led to just incredible amounts of lobbying and whining. And it does put them into boxes that they then either have to disregard or they have to stay in. And if, you know, and then they got to justify one way or the other what they're going to do. So to me, that's an easy fix, but I don't know whether ESPN wants to fix that fix.
No. In earlier this week, you know, I had a story about the future kind of the selection committee, a little bit about all the criticism of the selection committee. And Bob Bowlsby, the former Big 12 commissioner, told me, you know, when he was a Big 12 commissioner and part of the CFP, he suggested that you do two rankings. Right now they do six, right? In counting the last one, I think it's six, counting the last one every week. And he suggested you do two. You do one at the end, obviously, the last ranking. And then you just do one ranking in that 6 week or so stretch leading up to the last ranking. Maybe you do it before the championship games. Maybe you do it before the regular season finale. He had maybe suggested that, as I recall from our conversation. But as he said, and I quote, if you did that, ESPN would flip out.
Well, make some concessions, because right now the tail is wagging the sport.
Yeah.
Okay. So as long as you have the committee boxed in, or you have, like, Ward Manuel goes, well, anybody who played, we can't reevaluate. Well, why not? Isn't Alabama's victory over Georgia more valuable now that Georgia is number two than if Georgia had lost? What if Texas beats the hell out of Georgia yesterday? Wouldn't Alabama's victory over Georgia be less important? But they are boxed in by something that's fake. It's like the NFL draft. So-and-so sliding in the first round. It hadn't happened yet.
How do you slide in something that hasn't happened?
Yes. And it hasn't happened. So this is the easiest fix. And I think you would have a better chance if the Alabama argument is not we need more automatic bids. It's you got done in by your own process that your league agreed to, because ESPN was throwing a little more money at you for this show. These guys will sell everything to the highest bidder.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
I mean, it's part of, I get ESPN's, I don't blame ESPN. They're trying to do business.
No, right. No, they're putting out a billion product that people watch.
Yes. I mean, but if you're running the sport, you got to at some point say, well, there's a limit to what we're going to give away, including the sanctity of this decision-making process. So if I'm Alabama, my case is not with, I don't know, whatever. It's why the hell did we let ourselves get boxed out? Because if you look and you look at what SMU's, all its numbers and all its info, it ain't a whole lot different than Miami. So why was Alabama ahead of Miami last week, but not SMU this week? And why maybe Miami should be ahead of SMU? And you get, well, that's because that's what we chose last week. That was last week. Why did we choose something? It's just, this is dumb.
The other side of the argument, when I asked these people who created this, why else outside of content for ESPN, why are you doing these rankings, right, so much and so often? And the thought is, well, one of the things that Bill Hancock has told me this is, we didn't want people to rely on the AP and coaches poll and think that that's what the committee was going to do at the end. So we wanted to have our poll out so that fans would not kind of like lean on the AP and coaches and say, oh, this is how it should be. This is how it's going to be. And then the other part of this was there was the thought that when you drop it at the last, you know, when you don't say anything and then boom, you have a bracket, that people would just also freak out because, well, there's been no expectation level. But I would disagree with that last point because of what, right, you said. There doesn't need to be an expectation level. There's not that way in the NCAA tournament. They release one ranking, right, like a few weeks before. All that needs to happen.
That's what I was going to say, is they have a 1 month out top 16 from the basketball tournament. And they did that in reaction to the football rankings.
Right.
But they stopped at one and said, that's it. You know,
we don't care what Joe Lenardi's got to say or Jerry Palm. That's their projection. The so well,
you know what? Yeah. The NCAA is not beholden by the top 20 for basketball, the top 25s or Joe Lenardi or Jerry Palm or any of that stuff. They come out with what they come out with, and everybody, then you get some complaining, but that's it. You don't have a month of complaining and a month of tortured explanations from some hostage committee chair.
I think
one of two things, right? You don't have any polls at all until the last one, or you have one poll 3 or 4 weeks before the last, maybe November 1 or something like that.
I would have none, but whatever. Yeah. That's fine. And you could have mock ones where they pretend they work on it so they get some reps on how they talk. That's fine. Yeah. But the debate over the decision, part of the decision was what was already decided. Pass cannot be prologue in this. And so, again, if you're Alabama and you're angry, be angry at two things. You lost to Oklahoma and you agreed to this committee putting out 6 rankings. That's your solution, not I need more bids or this or this whole, we're not going to play, we're going to be ashamed if something happened to your non-conference scheduling, you know, all these threats and stuff.
Right.
You got screwed by a committee that did exactly what they were told to do by you.
And you mostly got screwed by scoring 3 points against a 6-6 team.
And that's why I don't care. Like, if you picked S, everyone's like, what do you think? They both are flawed. My thing intellectually is SMU deserved to be in because there's 12-team playoff because they did it, or they were in it last week. Fine. But I think Alabama, by virtue of their victory over Georgia, has proven they could beat anyone in this field. And I don't know, SMU certainly hasn't proven that, and I don't know that's the case. If Alabama had gotten in, I would have sat there and said, well, that's fine. Somebody had to make a 50-50 call here. They made a 50-50 call. But I don't know that Alabama got full consideration that they should have. I don't know that Tennessee got full consideration on why aren't they a top 8 seed. Because if you look at what I don't think Ohio State got full consideration over why exactly are we 2 spots behind Penn State when we beat them at Penn State. Well, everyone was down on you because you lost to Michigan. Okay, that was a horror, but let's settle. What if Notre Dame had lost to NIU in the final game instead of in September? Like, you can't set this stuff up. And so that's the solution to whatever the complaint is let's get a more holistic, fresh look. They say, oh, we start anew. Do they really? Like, you can't, because you'd look like hypocrites and they would have gotten torched and, oh, everyone will quit the championship game. That shouldn't be a criteria. That is not a criteria. All right, a couple other things they should solve. Enough with the 4-team, top 4 seeds got to be conference champs. I don't agree with it. I think maybe this was a homage to like when Jim Delaney was so big into conference champs, you can't, got to win your conference championship. Bless Boise State. Love them. Have been writing about Boise State for decades. Incredible accomplishment getting in this thing. You aren't the number 3 team in the country. You're number 9. Arizona State, incredible story this year. You're not number 4. And what it does, it doesn't just put you in there. It screws the whole bracket up. And because they won't reseed, which wouldn't actually solve all the problems, but it might help, because they want the bracket, because they love how the NCAA March Madness bracket goes. It's all messed up. So you have unbalanced seating. So you have a situation where Penn State loses last night is the best thing that could have happened to them. On paper, at least. Penn State is the 6th seed. They get to host SMU and then play Boise State at a neutral site. Number 1, Oregon. Thanks for going up 13-0 and being the dominant number 1 team in the country. Your reward is you get to play Ohio State or Tennessee at a neutral site. Oh, you get a bye, but those teams had a bye last night. So I don't know what your advantage was. The seeding does not need to be conference champs in that top 4. This seems very simple to me.
Yeah, I agree. I think that's caused maybe more problems than it's worth. And I liked the concept at first because I thought, okay, you know, that conference championship game means even more. You know, you don't just get in, but you can get a bye. But in reality, it just doesn't really make for the best possible playoff when the 4 best teams in the eyes of the committee are not getting byes. That's who should get it. And if that's 3 from the Big Ten or if it's 3 from the SEC, okay, that's the way it goes. But I think that we have wonked this thing up just enough that, yes, we have created some really kind of screwy matchups there.
Something to keep in mind, I think I said this maybe on the pod last taping, you know, this was created in the middle of realignment, before, when it was created, you had five power leagues. Now you have four. And even though they changed the format to adjust, they didn't change the buys, the four first round buys. So I think that would be something. I'm kind of like Pat. I really like that. Originally, I did. I liked the format originally. I thought it was great. When it came out, I was like, this is wonderful. Like, it just checks up all these boxes. And now when I look back, when I see it play out, right, I'm starting to change my mind on some things. And
that's why you let it cook.
Yeah, let it cook. That's right. Yeah, I really, I second guess the buys as well, Dan, now that I look back on this. And one other thing that also has come to light that we talked about plenty is the conference championship games. Something's got to be done. Something's got to be done there. I think I said it on the last pod when they created this, the creators were in the room and Jack Swarbrick was one of them and said, guys, this is going to kill conference championship games eventually. You got it. You're going to have to change how you do it. And it's pretty clear that's the case.
I said, yeah, I think dump them. Let me give you the TV benefit of it. I get this is going to be costly. The benefit
not if
of
you expand the playoff, Dan, and add another round or two and get more money.
Well, let's hope we don't do that.
Oh,
there's only
expand
so much those games. I know. Well, let's hope they don't do that. 12 has been perfect. This debate has been perfect. This is fine. But you can add another first round game. It's not going to be that much. I believe this will play out, that the television ratings would be far better and you're more valuable if what we just had this weekend was Army-Navy. We're playing first rounds next week. We're playing quarterfinals 2 weeks after that, just before Christmas. And the semifinals are on New Year's Day. And the championship game is not all the way to January 20th. I think your ratings will be higher if you can condense this thing. So there is some back-end value in a TV media deal. I don't think ESPN is going to be really thrilled at a January 20th championship game, that they're still trying to sell college football 6 weeks from now.
Right.
I think they will see two rounds of
the NFL playoffs.
Right. I think that the sooner you get this condensed, the more likely you get that 28, 30, 35 million person viewership that an ESPN wants, that they make huge money off. Instead of a January, it's going to be Martin Luther King Day, a Monday night. We're deep in the NFL playoffs. Most of the rest of the sport has moved on to next season. They've lost their focus on the last season. There's only two teams left. So there's some. The other one, quarterfinals have to be home games. You have to reward these teams that are 1-4. Oregon got nothing. They got virtually nothing. Their bye is later than Ohio State, Tennessee's bye. That's all they got out of this. And so if you want the regular season to matter more, give them a home game, at least for the quarterfinals, if not the semis. You play this and you schedule this thing better in the semis. But I understand Rose Bowl. This is a cop out to the bowl industry. Again, the tail is wagging the sport.
Can't argue with you there. And I am hopeful that the scene and the boom and the juice that we see in Austin and in South Bend and in State College and in Columbus gets everybody else say, yeah, we want some of that too. Because I think that would really then kind of push this over the edge and we would have quarterfinals on campuses.
Yeah, Dan, you look at the paths, if you project out, right, not only will Oregon not host a game, they will potentially play in a semifinal against Texas in the Cotton Bowl in Dallas. And that is not not great at all for your number one seed. And that's just how it works. Geography, based on what they've done there, they can't project out a team. They're just doing it based on Oregon closer with the Cotton Bowl, Dallas, than it is the other semifinal, which is the Orange Bowl. But that would be pretty unfair if Texas, who would be a huge favorite against Clemson in the first round, probably a pretty heavy favorite against Arizona State in the second round at the Peach Bowl, and then, would meet in Dallas with, potentially Oregon. When you project out, Oregon got a little bit of a shaft there on the path, and in Texas as the five seed, as we talked about, right? You kind of want to be that five seed. They got a little
five
better pathway.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Penn One State's thing. Path is really something, right? Yeah. SMU, Boise State, And then they would play Georgia in Miami.
Let me ask you this. The one thing that surprised me out of this was Texas getting a 5. I thought they were going to be more like 6 or 7, possibly even 8.
Yeah.
Were they trying to get them on the opposite side of the bracket from Georgia so they didn't have Georgia-Texas 3 until what would be the championship game?
If that was why, I'd be okay. I think it's because they already said Texas was better than Penn State, so what do they do now? Right. Again, they were stuck.
Yep.
And then yep. And you go, all right, well, who is Texas defeated? Why, this is where I don't want to get into these things like this or that, but what about Tennessee on that?
Yeah.
They at least beat Alabama.
Like, Tennessee's got a better resume than Texas.
Right, but they weren't there. So Tennessee never even got consideration to move out of that 9 slot. And because there's two teams that are behind them that are 3 and 4, and because Penn State and Notre Dame, they were not allowed to be moved up. So Penn State, Notre Dame, Ohio, all the other teams had to stay ahead of them. They're potentially, first of all, they're the 7th seed in the rank, their 7th team in the rankings, but maybe they're higher. And instead of getting a home game and a more favorable draw, hey, congratulations, Vols. Welcome to Columbus. Now, the only benefit is that the fans in Columbus can't stand their coach.
Yeah.
But, right. You know, I don't think Tennessee got a fair shake on this. Again, is this a massive problem? No. But I could, if I'm Tennessee, I'm saying, wait a minute here. Let's take a look at this. And I don't think they got a chance to look at it because of the ranking system. And this whole, and then because of the seedings and because there's no home field. I mean, this is also completely unfair to the fans. You're asking Oregon fans to travel 3 times to win the if you're in Oregon, you're thinking we're going to win the national championship. We have a very, very good chance at being in Atlanta on January 20th. How many fans can take not only the money, but the time to travel to 3 straight games? Only the very wealthy.
Right. Phil Knight and his crew and a few others, you know.
Look at the championship game attendance, right? I mean, even in the SEC championship game, you could see crowd shots. There were plenty of empty seats, plenty. ACC, plenty. Big 12, plenty. I mean, you could see it from TV. ACC had tarps in the top levels. The Big 10 seemed to be the most full that I saw. But, like, you know, look, people are making decisions. And the thing is, it's so evident to everybody in college athletics. Like when I bring up with some of these leaders or the ADs, commissioners about the attendance and the ticket sales this past week, the immediate reaction is, we know, you know, fans don't want to keep traveling. We're putting a lot of pressure on the fans to keep traveling. So we know this is going to happen. Well, what's going to be the reaction to it? What's going to be the solution here?
They have to tell the bowl people, we get it.
Yeah.
That, I mean, they have to cut the bowls out. And they've never shown an ability to do that. This has been a problem and predicted. Again, we wrote that book 15 years ago. I mean, it was obvious then. What are you guys doing? So we have this. These are clear problems. I love the idea because college football fans are not all wealthy. And I love, all right, this first round, there's going to be over 400,000 people are going to watch these 4 games. All 3 stadiums are over 100,000 and Notre Dame's like 80 or 81 or something. And I love that, yes, there are wealthy boosters. And yes, those people dominate the headlines. But I absolutely love that there's like a couple from Mishawaka, Indiana that have had Notre Dame tickets for 45 years and they're going to get to go over and sit in their 2 seats and watch this game. And there's a family from Altoona. They just go to local Penn State games and they've never been on a bowl trip and they got to work every morning and they can do that watch the Penn State Nittany Lions in a playoff game where if they move that thing to Miami or Arlington, they sit at home. I love that because that's the blood of the sport, the students, the whole thing. It's not just about rich people who can fly off. And these 4 towns that love college football are going to get all of the economic benefit of these games, the hotels, the restaurants, the liquor stores, whatever it is. I love all of it. And so it is so much better, but they got to cut out their friends in the bowl industry. And that has proven to be a very difficult thing for them to do, but let's get organized. All right. Let's talk about the matchups when we get back, because they're good. All right, let's run through these. Forget what has happened or what should happen. Let's look at what will happen. Early thoughts. Clemson, little old Clemson. This is a big deal for Dabo Swinney's program. I don't know. This is a big deal. His program has been reeling, and certainly this has not been some dream season of his, but they're in the damn playoff. And that you could see it in his face last night how big that thing was. They're going to Texas. I want to shout out to Aaron and Laura Garza of Royal Oak, Michigan. Laura went to Clemson. Aaron went to Texas. Good friends of mine. It's going to be an ugly month. It'll be an ugly month. Pat, your thoughts on this matchup. Can Clemson do this? What do we think Texas is? Is Quinn Ewers the right quarterback? Where are we with this thing? Winner gets Arizona State.
I mean, there's two matchups here, I think, in particular that are intriguing this in the first round, but this is definitely one of them. Because does anybody really want to play Clemson in a do or die game? I don't think so. You know, I mean, they're not a great team. We've seen it. Phil Moffa's playing hurt at running back. They don't have, you know, that real punch in the running game. But they've got a blooming star receiver in Bryant Wesco, who tore up SMU. Cade Klubnik played very well against SMU. The defense is a Clemson defense. It's good. It's not like, you know, one of the all-time great Clemson defenses, but it's good enough. And Texas, you know, they're good, but they're not. I don't watch them and say, wow, that's a special team. That team could win a national championship. I watched them play a backup quarterback from the second half here and not win. Lose to a Georgia team that was struggling and didn't have its guy at quarterback there. And just, you know, kind of budged its way down the field. And Quinn Ewers throwing the ball to the wrong team. So I think I'm picking Texas. But I think Texas needs to play better than it has several of the last times we've seen them play.
Yeah, this isn't – we talked about Texas's path and, you know, getting to semis, being in Dallas. But when you just look at this one game, I agree. This is not the easiest matchup. I'm sure Texas would have probably preferred, I assume, to play SMU or like Indiana. And that's kind of why my projected bracket, I actually had Clemson as the 11 seed and SMU as the 12 seed. And I know that was a lot for Clemson to move up. They just played on a neutral field. One of the effing criteria that this committee is supposed to use, the second one, is head-to-head. And I know they look at the full body of work. I understand that, and I agree they should do that. But when you're within one loss of one another, when teams are within one loss of one another, like Clemson and SMU are, shoot, look to head-to-head, the head-to-head that just happened. I really think that SMU should have been the 12. And Clemson should have been the 11. That would have been Clemson going to Penn State and Texas playing SMU, because this is not a great draw for Texas. I would not, just like SMU's standpoint in the ACC championship game, shoot, there's a reason I picked Clemson to win. I mean, I wouldn't want to play Clemson and Dabo Swinney in any kind of playoff game where it's do or die. Absolutely not. I don't care if I got them at home or what. And the thing is, now this game's in Austin, I think in the middle of the day, right? Kickoff at 4 o'clock. I think 4 o'clock. So, local. All right. So it's not like Clemson's going and playing some cold weather climate, right? So it should be cool maybe, but not cold. Look out. And they're rolling, man. I mean, Klubnik's playing really well. They've got a defense that up until the last quarter of that SMU game, you know, played really well as well. And they got a kicker. My God.
Dude, they got a kicker. Clemson lost to South Carolina, but that was a good game. And South Carolina they had three losses. They could not get over Alabama and Ole Miss. And we talked about South Carolina's situation, but this is a really hot team late and playing great football. And I know Clemson lost the game, but it was 17-14. And I know it was at home and all that, but it wasn't like they got blown out by him. it's going to be a real interesting game. And I don't know where Texas is at the quarterback position. I don't know where Texas is with a bunch of stuff. So we'll see what the spread is before I make a, I'm sure there's some early spreads, but it'll move. All right. Tennessee.
Right now, Dan, I'll tell you the spread. Yeah. The early, I think I saw some, I can hit these real quick. The early spreads are Texas is a 10-point favorite. Which seems really high. Another one that to me seems high, Ohio State is a 7-point favorite over Tennessee. Penn State is 8.5-point favorite over SMU. That one to me seems about right. And Notre Dame, 7.5-point favorite over Indiana. So some really big spreads, surprisingly big in Columbus and in Austin.
Yeah. All four, really. Well, let's go to Columbus. Tennessee, they're 8 because they lost to Arkansas early on, but they took care of business other than this game at Georgia. And they, you know, they have a knack for winning. They have a ferocious defensive line, which Ohio State, we just saw, had problems with against Michigan. They have a dynamic offense, good combo of passing and running. And Josh Heupel's program is surging. And Ohio State, it's all going to be about, can they wipe the memory of Michigan out? Can they, is that going to drag them down, or is it now liberating? Because I can tell you one thing about this field, Michigan ain't in it. And so I think Ohio State's like third or fourth in the betting to win the national championship and their odds. And that's with a very tough draw right now, because they're going to have to go through Oregon. But Pat, thoughts on this one?
Yeah, I'm of two minds about this. For one, yes, we've seen Ohio State in this setting before in 2022, lose to Michigan, crushing defeat, then turn around and play a phenomenal game and lose at the end to Georgia. If they can turn around and play like that, they're going to win multiple games probably in this tournament. But the hangover this time is bigger, I think, the residue from this loss. And I really think having a home game could work against them. Herb Street said on the air Sunday what we have said on the podcast as well. Is like, you get a, if they get off to another slow start like they did against Indiana, say, oh boy, that place is going to be not pleasant. And I think it's already shown the pressure of the job, and the season has already shown an effect on Ryan Day and probably on the players. And I think it would multiply, and you're playing a really good opponent. So I kind of like Tennessee in this situation.
Me too. I feel the same way. It's almost like you don't want to say that they'd have a better chance on the road, but it getting them out of there after what happened last game there does seem to be that would be beneficial to them. Although I'm sure Ohio State and Ryan Day would want to go into Neyland Stadium, but I this one is full of pressure, like every game Ohio State's played. And as we talked about it, a few pods ago, right after the Michigan game, about Ryan Day's future, he seems like he needs to win. And I know that that's a duh comment, but this one seems important at home against an SEC team. And then you get the number one seed, but it's the number one seed that in their place you battled up to the very end. And it's hard to beat a team twice, I think. And so you've got a path here if you can get over the Vols.
SMU at Penn State. Which SMU are we getting? The first quarter SMU from last night, or the fourth quarter? Kevin Jennings is a wizard for SMU.
Yeah. Oh boy.
I don't recall a player who's better at looking like he's going to run and then stop on a dime and throw a pass. This kid must have been a hell of a point guard. it was crazy watching some of these plays. Penn State lost to Oregon, but showed the offense. It was a decisive loss. It wasn't like wasn't certainly a last second play, but they acquitted themselves fairly well. They get the home game. There may not be a better home environment in football, but they also have James Franklin carrying the mantra of can't win the big one. And a playoff game counts as a big one. SMU isn't a traditional power. So this one fascinates me. Winner gets Boise.
It's fascinating. You're right. Kevin Jennings has got some Cam Ward in him, I think, where he can make plays off script like few people. He has a feel. He has a knack. he also can make mistakes because he's always trying to keep the play alive and make the big play. And he had a lot of turnovers coming into that game, and he had two in the first quarter that put him way behind the eight ball. But then the comeback, whoo! I mean, he can make throws, he can run, he can just pull stuff out. And I think almost, you know, the looser the game is, the more it's just like go ball, the better he probably is at this juncture as somebody who's only started, I think, what, like 8, 9 college games? I love him, but I'm not sure I love him in this setting. You've got Abdul Carter chasing you. It's going to be probably incredibly cold. You will have 105,000 people, you know, up your ass, and I think that Penn State home field advantage is probably going to have an effect here.
So eloquent.
It's funny because, you know, we just talked about Clemson being the 11 instead of how I would have put it, because head-to-head, Clemson being the 11 and SMU the 12. But the 11 in this case, perhaps, maybe drew the toughest matchup, especially given the weather, right? Up in State College, when you think about the weather, you think about the whiteout or something, you know, at is this one at? No, this one's not at night, huh? This was at noon. So it won't be at night. Yeah, it won't be at night there in Happy Valley. But still tough. The, of all the first round, you know, matchups, this one appears, at least for the traveling party, to be maybe the most difficult one, factoring in the weather and you know, you got a Dallas team going up to the mountains of Pennsylvania, and you got a team in Penn State that just went blow to blow pretty well with Oregon. I mean, they were behind the whole game, but they kept answering. And offensively, you know, they seemed to be, you know, catching fire a little bit. Penn State is, and so this is tough. This would be tough to see an upset. But then again, you know, the Mustangs have been doubted all year, Dan. So, and Kevin Jennings, late in that game, I mean, Pat and I were sitting next to each other in the press box, and I kept looking up, and I'm saying, I keep not wanting to pay attention to this game. It was over at some point. I'm trying to write and do other things, and I keep looking up, and Kevin Jennings, every time I look up, is flicking some ridiculous pass on the run and making a first down or a touchdown. It was amazing.
Yeah. One other thing there, and the committee did not bow to what would have been the ratings bonanza and the brand name bonanza of having Alabama at Penn State. You know, they went with what the teams they thought should be there. And so we get SMU Penn State, which I think is going to be a fun game. But can you imagine Alabama Penn State? That would draw a number.
That would draw a number. Also, the weather bit, they did not put the Texas game at 8 o'clock. They're not afraid of South Bend and Columbus at 8 o'clock. Now look, December 21st, it could be 40 degrees or it could be four.
Yeah.
December generally, it's not going to be, it's more going to be 30, but you don't know. It can also get, it can get bad or it can be not that bad. January is when it really gets.
We need an extended forecast. Look at the extended forecast, Dan.
Well, why don't you go to weather.com?
I already looked up the historic averages for South Bend and for State. They were like, you know, 32 roughly for the high.
Yeah. I mean, it's going to be cold, but there's a huge difference between 32 and 12.
There is. If it runs a little warmer. And like
what do you got, weatherman? Let's go to Doppler radar with Ross Dellinger. Ross Dellinger is such a weatherman name.
It only goes, the weather bug only goes 10. I wanted to be a weatherman. That's what I wanted to be at first. Yeah.
Oh, Miss State's got that good weatherman.
I know.
School.
Meteorology almost did that. Yeah. But
it's
anyway.
Oddly, the weatherman school, right?
Talk for another day. Tuesday before the Friday, 3 days before the game, here's the forecast in South Bend. 36 degree high, 28 low, 30% chance of frozen mix. Bring it, baby.
Frozen mix.
Bring it, baby. How do you like the sound of that?
Just put frozen a little tequila mix in a frozen mix, and it's delicious.
That's right. Columbus, a little warmer, 42 that Tuesday, 42 degree high,
okay,
and it's rainy.
Well, there you go. Okay, that ought to do it. Let me tell you one thing about winter in the Midwest. That 10-day thing is extremely accurate.
Yeah. 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 Yeah.
Sure.
No offense to the Mississippi State weathermen. Yeah.
I know. There you go.
All right. Indiana at Notre Dame, finally. Home again, they wanted that thing. Friday night, they're going to do that. Obviously, Notre Dame will get a great rating.
Oh, man.
I think everybody who ever thought of campus sites, one of the first things you thought of was like Notre Dame's such an iconic place, and you know, you can hate Notre Dame, but it's pretty beautiful. There's some nice movie snow dropping down on that gold dome. Yeah. You know, this is pretty good. State championship.
Yeah.
Indiana, you know, looked really good in their 11 victories. Looked less good against Ohio State, but it wasn't a total disaster. I don't know what they can do against Notre Dame. Kirk Cignetti will be quite confident. We know that. I thought Indiana benefited greatly considering their ranking of losing the tiebreaker to Penn State, not getting to have to face Oregon and putting themselves in that crosshair.
Yeah.
Everyone will scream at me and said, oh, we would have done fine. Maybe you would. This is a prove it game for Indiana. This is a dream season. It's one of the great stories of all time, what they have put together. But, you know, it can't just end with a great regular season and losses to Ohio State and Notre Dame. So huge pressure on Indiana, and I think Indiana loves it. Pat?
Sure. Oh, yeah. You think Cignetti isn't fired up about this? He'll add Notre Dame sucks to his list of schools that sucks the next time he talks at Assembly Hall to the student body there. I don't like the matchup much for Indiana. I just think that the offensive line we saw is a weak spot. We saw that against Ohio State. And Curtis Rourke is a good quarterback, but I'm not sure he reads and handles pressure really well. Notre Dame's not exactly like a blitz the house team, but they can get pressure on you, and they just have an excellent defense. So between getting in the backfield and possibly picking off some passes with their super secondary, I think the Notre Dame defense is going to cause some problems in this one.
Notre Dame, South Bend and Bloomington separated by right around, 3 to 3.5 hours. I did the drive actually earlier this year, just about 3 weeks ago, did that drive. Beautiful drive, Dan. Beautiful drive through the state of
scenic.
Indiana.
Yeah, very scenic. Southern part. Yeah. Southern Indiana scenic. Yeah.
So they're separated by about 3 hours and haven't played since 1991. According to this, what I'm looking at, amazing that they've gone that long. Notre Dame, 23-5-1 leads the series. 23-5-1. Indiana's last win, 1950. Dan, Indiana's last win. So a little revival of an in-state series here. Really exciting. You got two contrasting styles, like Pat was talking about. You've got just probably one of the most sound, solid defensive units in the country against one of the more explosive and fun offensive units. And it should be a ball. But if it's 30 with frozen mix, I would tend to side with the defensive team.
We're going to talk a lot more of these matchups over the next 2 weeks. All the other stuff going on, coaching carousel, all that. We'll be back on Tuesday. Just briefly, because I fear this story will fade and it'll go away and we don't get our chance. How great would it be for Bill Belichick to take over at North Carolina? Can we please get Bill Belichick at North Carolina?
We don't ask for a lot on this show. We don't ask for a lot.
You know? Hire the man. He's the greatest of all time. What are we doing? You want to hire the Tulane coach over Bill freaking Belichick? Come on, man.
A wing and a prayer, Dan. You got a wing and a prayer over there. I wouldn't bet that Bill Belichick is North Carolina's next head coach. We got one of the Power League jobs at least filled, right? Barry Odom headed to West Lafayette to go to Purdue. So we have North Carolina, West Virginia, and the other one, UCF rehired Scott Frost for
a
second stint.
Tuesday.
So
Belichick,
we've got
two openings. Belichick, come on, man.
I did dearly love the people that are like, Yeah, he'll really win over the recruits. He doesn't have personality to win over recruits. Oh, no, but he does have 6 Super Bowl rings.
People think those press conferences are who Bill Belichick is. He just did that stuff. He's extremely charismatic. He's 72 with a 24-year-old girlfriend. He can relate
to younger people. Yeah. He can clearly relate to younger people.
Come on. Like, people are like, well, he's miserable in press conferences. That's just like, he isn't normally. If you talk to him away from that, he's quite, there is a personality there. Anyway, please, just for us.
I'm going to light a votive candle.
He'll win. Oh my God, it'll be so fascinating. I don't know how you don't hire him. It's not like there's this obvious candidate that's just, you have to grab. It's Bill Belichick.
I know.
Your school. And it's like grabbing Dion. Like, people are like, well, I don't know about Dion. I mean, remember all the reasons people didn't want to hire Dion? He doesn't really go to staff meetings, and we're not sure about this. He does things a little different. Yeah, he sells out every stadium, gets recruits, makes the focal point. You're on national TV every week.
Went 9-3 this year.
Yeah. How many schools didn't want Dion?
Yeah.
This is Bill freaking Belichick. You got him. You can get him. Hire him. Take Steven. Who cares?
Yeah, right.
Anyway, that's our plea. That's our show. We'll be back Tuesday. Thanks for subscribing. We will talk to you later.